Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome once again to the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by Mr. Becky Mahlobo.
How's it, Nicholas? Thanks for having me on. How's it, Terrence?
Oh, wait, sorry, we're getting horrible echo.
Echo from my side.
Maybe it's from mine. Yeah, go ahead. No, sorry, it's from my side. Carry on. Oh, no, go ahead, Becky. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, sorry. No, I was just greeting you, Nick, asking how you are. I wish you didn't reply, as well as Terrence. How are you doing, Terrence?
Sorry, I made the mistake of having my, and this is, of course, the problem with doing these things live, is I had the mistake of having my own, the own live stream open in the background so I could hear myself. It was really awful. And, of course, we have Mr. Terrence Corrigan with us as well. Terrence's camera is not working, so instead we have a picture of Terrence visiting Berlin. Terrence, how are you?
No, I'm good. Just freezing cold today, isn't it?
It is horrific.
Pretty much matches the mood in the country.
Yes. So, of course, you know, we have no choice but today to talk a little bit about the riots and chaos that are ongoing. But what's interesting, I think, about what we're seeing now is how South Africans from across the spectrum of class and race and all these other things that we love to divide our society into are stepping up in various ways to fill the breach. So there are stories about taxi organizations policing the streets in some areas. There are stories, there was one from Diepsloot, of people who set up roadblocks, just ordinary people. And if a car drove through that they thought had looted goods, they would stop them and basically confiscate all of their stuff. We've also seen, of course, videos of ordinary citizens with their own firearms defending their homes and communities. We've seen farmers defending towns. We've seen an enormous number of individual people stepping up to do stuff. And beyond just protecting property, we're also seeing things like people volunteering to go and clean up shopping centers and to fix them and to support people who have had their businesses destroyed with charity. So there's a lot of good stuff coming through right now. But let's just start off with some personal stuff. Becky, your community is quite close to, I think, some of the writings of the place you stay. It's quite close. Tell me, what is the feeling of your neighbors? What's the feeling of your family? And what have you seen in the area?
Yeah, Nick, just to offer a bit of context, about 2 days ago, a shopping center in my area, Spreadview, and falls under Katlehong, was looted. Twice during the morning and then later on at night. And then about 10 minutes away, in fact, it's a walking distance from that shopping center, the Krisani shopping mall, which you probably also seen in the media, was looted as well. And unfortunately, the people that are particularly most vulnerable to this are small businesses, businesses that unfortunately don't have any form of security, armed security, to defend themselves and defend their property. There's simply no police measures in sight, and unfortunately, there's no means in which they can protect their shops, and unfortunately, that results in certain people taking advantage of that and looting. And that's exactly what we've been seeing. We've been seeing some of which opportunists are not unemployed. Some of them have jobs, just simply looting shops. But the great majority of these people are desperate, have lost their jobs during lockdowns, and as well, some of them haven't had a job in the past so many years. So that's what we've been currently seeing. And as a response to that, my community is particularly disgusted by these actions. And there is talks of the community going to essentially clean the shopping center that was looted. That's currently what's happening.
So, I mean, the sense, we've talked about this on the last 2 days on the show, and the sense was that, you know, there might be some political actors getting involved in all this, and we'll get to that. But from what you've seen and heard in where you're staying, you think that there's not that much of a political dimension to this.
No, there's not much of a political dimension to this. I mean, most of the people that were looting there are not Zuma supporters themselves. Not at all. Like I mentioned earlier, some of them are opportunists. Most of them are desperate individuals that haven't had an income, don't have an income, can't sustain themselves as well as their families. That still does not excuse their actions. Not at all. This is just, Zuma was just a trigger. He's not the main driving force of what we're seeing in my community as well as in many other communities in the country.
Terence, what do you make of this? Do you have any more stories and observations to add of the last couple of days?
You know, if I had to put my finger on an image that encapsulates what we've seen, it would be, I think it was an SABC, it could have been an ENCA reporter, in Pietermaritzburg, walking down a looted street, which looked like a bomb had hit it. You know, broken windows, twisted security gates. And he said in an absolute deadpan voice, "Let's try and walk over to that shop that is being looted." And I think that just encapsulated it. The disjuncture between the calm, professional way he said that, as though this is, and you know, in many ways, it is just another news item. But what this foretold, I mean, there was a spoof doing the rounds about 20 years ago about how the different newspapers in South Africa would cover the end of the world. So you had the Forks Blitz saying Wereld einde gnomili us, and the Burger saying INC Wereld einde is INC complot. But I mean, this really seemed like that. The other image with these police officers striding around with this desolate air of foul authority, occasionally stopping to discharge a round from their shotguns. Part of me became angry that this was so ineffective, but then I also thought to myself, what could they really do? You know, it's not like this is a gang of three or four teenagers, trying to take away an LG TV set. These are people literally raised the LG factory in Durban, apparently. You know, even if you were going to turn some sort of live ammunition, and I'm not advocating this, on that crowd, it's just too big to be controlled. So that policeman was making a gesture, nothing more.
Mm-hmm. That seems to be some defining feature of so much of the state's response to all of this.
What I'm noticing in particular in my area is that there hasn't been a wild-scale looting of spaza shops compared to xenophobic attacks in previous years. It's just largely targeted at shopping centers. I think there are other factors at play here, largely due to the fact that you can get more out of a shopping center than you can from a spaza. But then one thing to also consider is that spaza shops are close to people's homes. And I think if there is a wide-scale looting of spaza shops, they will be met with more resistance. That's the sense that I'm getting and I'm sensing from my particular community. And like another point that I'd like to make here is that these violent protests and looting, it's not the first time in South African history. This happens almost on a daily occasion in the South African context, to the point where it's not even mentioned in headline media. In fact, a week before the protest actions that we're currently seeing, there was reports of mining executives killed at Richards Bay, 20 bullets shot at his car. So long as the fundamental issues, such as that of unemployment, people losing income levels, stagnant economic growth, if those issues are not addressed, unfortunately, we're going to see more of these protest actions happening more in future.
Yeah, I think violence in South Africa is very much like one of those kind of viral infections, which is constantly there, building, bubbling away, but only occasionally has flare-ups that make it very visible to the world. And I think we're definitely seeing really the greatest flare-up we've had, at least since 94. Terence, do you have anything to say on that point before we move on a bit?
You know, this has exposed the weaknesses of South Africa's state, and it's also the latest iteration of what the policy environment, the governance environment, the social environment have brought us to. The Economist had a comment about how ransacking a supermarket shelves is small beer compared to what has been happening at the upper echelons of government. And maybe there is something poetically symmetric, symmetrical about this happening with President Zuma as the spark. But then again, Zuma wasn't alone in venality. I hope that this will give some pause to actually think about the way that the country is being managed. But as Becky pointed out, this isn't the first time we've seen stuff like this, and it unfortunately probably won't be the last. I think maybe one of the differences is that this is probably the first time it's intruded in a significant way into the suburbs. Whether or not you have personally been affected, and I've spoken to people in Pietermaritzburg and on the coast who have felt personally threatened, there are going to be knock-on effects in terms of things like shortages of goods and shops. That was mainly last a few days, but I can tell you that online retailing is now backed up. Whereas you might
I actually just tried to order some groceries this morning from a delivery app, and they just said we're full.
Yeah, no, that is going to be the case for a little while, and I think there could be some cases of really serious fallout in terms of pharmacies shutting down, people not being able to get medication, and I suspect, although there appears to be some dispute of this, that this is going to help old man COVID in his romp through the country.
Indeed. So I see someone here was asking, what do we think of farms being next? And I actually want to link that into this question of the level to which this thing has been personally directed or deliberately directed by kind of ANC Zoomerites and that sort of thing. So I see there's a story that Becky brought my attention to in News 24, where apparently the police are investigating if previously employed ex-state security agents who are basically allies of Jacob Zuma have been fomenting or fanning the unrest in Gauteng and KZN. And that the state security minister has said that they are investigating these claims very seriously, and that Thulani Dhlomo has been specifically fingered as one of the individuals they think was an instigator here. And so the question of farms, I think, and I have heard stories about this, that that would seem to suggest that there is, at least in some parts of KZN, deliberate instigators going around here, that people are setting fire to farms while the farmers are in town helping with the defense of those towns from looting and chaos. Terence, what do you make of that? What is the role? I mean, we've talked about this for the last 3 days, but what is the role of nefarious agents or third forces, as the ANC loves to talk about?
I think that conspiracy theorists provide a wonderful sense of comfort to many people, that this isn't something that's burning out of control. There is a malevolent force directing it, and if that is the case, then it can be switched off. And I think this is, you know, irrespective of whether you're talking about riots in Pietermaritzburg or lizard people controlling the world or the Antichrist putting a microchip in your hand, all of those things I think actually satisfy a certain longing for security and order. In reality, I'm very attracted to what one of the investigators says in a meeting depicted in Oliver Stone's JFK. How are you going to keep a conspiracy going between the mob, the CIA, the FBI, and who the hell's know what else? We can't keep a secret between five people in this room. Is there instigation and fanning? Yes, you know, possibly are some people within the state or formally connected to the state with state-constructed networks assisting in it? It's certainly possible. That is the price you pay for a politicized state. And I saw former President Becky shared something on his Facebook page where ANC veterans were saying that they're afraid of this of something nefarious happening. Well, unfortunately, that would be the fruit of a policy deliberately pushed since the 1990s. But I think that, as one of our readers says here, is snowballing. I think that this is beyond what anyone may have foreseen or may have wished to encourage. The problem with setting in motion a dynamic like this is that you can't recall it. It gathers a life of its own. And I'm pretty sure that the people who are going in and looting mattresses and washing machines, and what I saw one lady coming out with a plastic bucket full of flowers. I would have thought that there would have been other objects, but apparently she wanted floral decorations. Those people, I don't think, require the direction or assent of a group of disreputable fellows in dark rooms. As for farms, I think that what's germane here is that rural security has been a perennial problem for decades. It is not properly resourced in any respect. With the best will in the world, and there are some very hardworking police officers, they don't have the helicopters, they don't have the quad bikes, they don't have the numbers and the reach and the communications equipment. And this is going beyond the farm attacks narrative. I'm talking stock theft, I'm talking vandalism, I'm talking organized and semi-organized land invasions. So in a situation where law and order breaks down and where there's a free-for-all with people taking what they want and often acting simply for wanton destruction. I mean, I think it's something that hasn't been adequately covered in the commentary about this, that there have been buildings torched, things have been stripped, and they're not just abandoned, but literally destroyed, as though you are underlining after despoilation comes destruction.
Becky and I were just talking about that before the show, about how weird it seems. You know, why loot a shopping center and then set it on fire?
Yes. Well, and I think this is what you are seeing with these arson attacks. I'm not sure how widespread it is. I'm not sure whether farmers are deliberately being targeted or just seen as another in a series of targets. But I think possibly the more concerning aspect of that for the country as a whole is how that is the source of your food supply. And if you are not able to get those goods to market, to distributors, that will have a knock-on effect into supermarkets, into spaza shops, into wherever people need to source their food. There was a piece I saw on Farmers Weekly about KZN dairy farmers who had to dispose of thousands and thousands of liters of milk. You think about the waste there, and you think about the operating losses they take. This is something that will echo far beyond those business people who have been directly targeted.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Our CEO, Franz Cronier, actually made a point in a meeting this morning that the search for instigators and things is, he thinks, a little bit of a distraction from the real issue here. So people are saying, you know, like the media is now going to chase after the 12 people that Becky clearly mentioned. He said there were 12 instigators that they had identified. But as our commenter here pointed out, you know, this what we saw here was a lot of a giant snowball sort of rolling down a hill. And that wouldn't be possible without the ground being prepared for it first. The ground was prepared for it by the unemployment, by the constant degrading of the rule of law, by encouraging political violence, by all these other things that the government has been deliberately doing, or either deliberately doing or doing by way of default. Their bad policy. Yeah, exactly.
Can I add something just a little bit?
Go ahead, Becky. Go ahead,
sort
Becky.
Of also like a distraction that they're doing. In no way am I discounting the involvement of certain officials, but then it does seem that this is merely a distraction from their failure of anticipation in the first place. Because you'd find that you could actually look at before the looting of shops, there was, for example, protests happening in KZN, and you could clearly see that things could escalate. And the burning of one shopping center should have been an instinct as well as like a signal to the police department that this might occur in other shopping centers in Gauteng as well as in the KZN. And the fact that they were not able to prevent that, and the fact that some officials needed to be called back from leave just speaks to the broader failure of governments and the police department and the maintain and the inability of the government to maintain law and order, honestly. And I think what we're seeing with Bekicele highlighting these 12 individuals is just them trying to distract from the core issues. And it's just utter failure of governance of the government.
True. Very true.
Exactly. Right. So I think for me, though, there has been... So let's talk about the issue of these militias and self-defense units and citizen actions and stuff. And on one hand, I think that there is a lot to be very happy about, seeing ordinary South Africans standing up to fill the breach, doing what they can. And for the first time, I'm getting a sense from government that they've actually kind of been forced to deal with reality and take their hands off and say, okay, no... This is thank you for helping us. I mean, that's a sentiment that I've heard from a few places. Even Cyril, although he condemned vigilantism and taking the law into your own hands, he also said thank you to all the communities who are helping our police. And generally speaking, there does seem to be far more of an acceptance of the public's role in organizing the defense here than I would have expected from the ANC. In fact, I could have foreseen a scenario where the ANC would have focused all of its attention on trying to stop vigilantism as the main threat here. Becky, do you think I'm imagining things, or do you think there has actually been an acceptance of reality by the state here?
There has been an acceptance of by the state in certain communities. In fact, I believe this is in Durban as well. The police department in that particular area actually asked community members to assist them in ammunition and protection, which just speaks to, like, they're unable to actually, they don't have the capacity to handle the numbers that they're seeing with looters. In certain instances, as well as my community, you'd find that there will be a police presence in the morning. But as soon as the police leave, the looting then continues and starts all over again. So there definitely needs to be community involved, volunteers, people from the community volunteering to protect their property and so forth. And I think this is something that the government needs to actually realize on a daily basis and not try to take away people's ability to defend themselves by the Firearms Amendment Bill. Because if that bill was enacted, these communities would have not been able to protect themselves, none at all. So this should be a clear sign. Yeah, at least not legally. At least not legally. This should be a clear example that the state is unable, as it currently stands, unable to protect these communities, more especially in poorer communities, as well as suburban areas, in fact.
Yeah, Terence, what do you make of that, my idea that the government is sort of accepting the civilian role in this?
I think it's too early to say. I think that the state has a very negative view of any kind of involvement in, let's say, the operational details of policing. I think that as an emergency stopgap, they sort of realized that they were outmatched in areas such as in parts of KZN where you saw shopkeepers and their networks gathering. They had to conclude that this was their natural ally on the spot. I think that the big question arises: what happens if one of these civilians seriously injures or kills a protester? This is something, interestingly enough, that I have discussed with serving police officers over time, that you'll have the minister saying, shoot the bastards, etc., etc., etc. Don't worry about the consequences. I'll take care of that. And the response is, no, you probably won't. I'll be, you know, if I am trigger happy, I'll be left holding the can. So that's something which I think we will have to keep an eye on. I don't think that it's great that you have a situation where armed civilians have to come out, you know, to form some sort of posse comitatus to maintain order. My views on self-protection is that is a final line that you are able to draw around yourself and your personal space. When it heads into what we've seen, then you have a very, very dark situation. I do, however, think that any justification for the deletion of self-defense as a justification for owning a firearm, and I emphasize this is not the only problem with this bill, depends on the implicit guarantee by the state that it can secure your safety to a reasonable degree. Now, in the best of times in South Africa, it can't do that. I think what this has shown is that when the chips are really badly down, civilians are on their own. And I think it is important to note that the need to defend oneself has been a Rainbow Nation thing over the past couple of days. I've certainly seen footage of Indian business people in KwaZulu-Natal. I understand there were small business people in Soweto and Alexandria who were reaching for the Glock behind the counter to keep their investments safe. I think that if we're going to take anything positive away from this, we have to get serious about discussing what will be a counter to crime. I think the Firearms Control Amendment Bill is not that. It is fundamentally a means to deal with what is seen as a problem of firearms, and it is being expressed in an idiom of crime. But as you've seen over the past couple of days, the ability to reach for that self-protection is, for many people, a matter of almost existential interest.
So I just want to deal with one final issue in the show today, and that is the potential downsides of having these sort of civilian defense groups and things. So one of our colleagues mentioned that we've seen a little bit of a similar situation here with the organization Pahad in the Western Cape, which of course was very popular at first because it targeted gangs in the Western Cape, and you know, a lot of people were really behind that, but it quickly turned into something that wasn't great. And I think there is a real risk of that happening now when the state just leaves this, as I say, nature abhors a vacuum. And when there's a vacuum of power, someone may step into that. I think someone in the comments yesterday was having a go at us a little bit on this point exactly. Terence, do you think that's a real worry? And then Vic, I'll also get your views on this before we close.
Well, you know, I think what's a real worry is this sort of thing fades away, and we fail to learn any lessons, and we then just wait for it to happen again. I mean, I think that this is not the first time something like this has happened, and sadly, it probably won't be the last, because we never seem to really learn the lessons.
Indeed. Becky, your final thoughts?
Yeah, 100% echo the concerns of that you've raised, Nick. My particular concern is that of mob justice. Then people that have lost their jobs, then communities that have been destroyed because of looting, then take it upon themselves to actually enact justice on the looters. That's the situation I definitely don't want to see. I definitely don't want to see people being taken out on the streets, and to certain cases, absolutely, being burnt, like what we saw in certain communities where gang members were round up and burnt in a public area. That's definitely not something that should happen in South Africa, not at all. But a point that I'd like to emphasize is that the only way that it escalates to that point is like the core issues that we have raised throughout this podcast. It's that if these issues are not addressed, stagnant economic activity, where the economy is not allowed to essentially grow out of its current situation, where the governance issues that we've raised, as well as Terence raised, as well as Nunek raised, are not solved, unfortunately, we'll see more of this happening on every occasion and on a monthly basis. And the more ways in the future will be more intense than the one we're seeing currently.
Yeah. All right. That's all the time we have for today. So thank you very much for watching and listening. I hope you are enjoying our experiment with doing this live. And for those who are listening to the recorded thing or to the video after the fact, also, we hope that you are enjoying it. So thank you very much. Please like, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. That helps us out. So it's interesting to get engagement from you guys. If you want to support the IRR, which funds the Daily Friend Show, you can SMS your name to 32823, and we'll call you back to sign you up as a friend of the Institute. Also, check out, of course, the dailyfriend.co.za for news and analysis of quality that you can't see in many other places around the country. Anyway, thank you very much. Have a wonderful day, and we will see you tomorrow.